Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and then today I am joined by Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet and the great Kenny and Rennie show that I listen to a ton. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming on. How are things, Sean? How's the world going in Winnipeg these days with, after such a great start?
Yeah, it's I mean, always exciting. I find that this Jets team is a team that ever since I've started covering them keeps you on your toes. I mean, this to me is actually, if you take a look at this year, it's very much a Winnipeg Jets season. It's like last year, it's like the year before. I mean, 2 years ago they were first place in the West in January and then almost fell out of the playoffs. And then last year you had a team that finished fourth overall and down the stretch lost eight straight games and then won eight straight games. I mean, this the Jets keep their fans on their toes. There's so many examples of how great a team they can be, and then so many examples of how hard hockey is and how hard it is to stay at the top. And I think we're going through that right now. One of the best starts we've ever seen in league history, and now 3-7 in their last 10 games. It's hard to tell who they are, as always, which, as a journalist, is fun to try and suss out.
Is there something where just with the team, like you have such a great start that there's the natural kind of slippage, or do you feel there's a bit more kind of underneath that's le leading to their kind of poor last 10 games?
Yeah, I think that it's human nature to, especially the kind of game that the Jets play. When the Jets are successful, they are a really, really hardworking team. And this is a blueprint that was set up by Rick Bonus when he came in to change the way the Winnipeg Jets play. The Winnipeg Jets were a skilled team for the vast majority of the years I've covered them that, would outskill teams until, the games got to be really grinding, and then they just, you can't do that, right? You can't do that anymore. You can't pass the puck into the back of the net in April, May, and June. And they'd run into troubles with that. Rick Bonus went to change who they were and turn them to a really grinding, hard to play against team. The problem with that is it's hard to play that style, and it's hard to play it night in and night out. And what you saw from the Winnipeg Jets for close to the first 20 games of the season was a team that I was kind of shocked that they just weren't having nights off, and they were doing that night in and night out, and you're thinking like, how are they keeping this up? And now they look like a tired team that's having, trouble getting up for games and isn't able to produce a lot of shots and is getting outshot heavily. And the thing about them is because they're so skilled, they can be that kind of team. Even on this last road trip they were on, they were scoring a goal on their first goal of the game, or sorry, their first shot of the game, their third shot of the game, and finding their way into games that they really shouldn't have been in. I mean, of the three wins that they've won in their last 10, one of those was against the Minnesota Wild, where they got absolutely caved in for the better part of two periods and then did a good job shutting the game down in the third, but probably had no right winning that game. So, I mean, this could be a 2-8 team in their last 10 games. Their skill has the ability to hide some warts for a little while. They've struggled, in my opinion, in the past at being that team that recognizes that their skill is winning them games and they need to get back to what they do best. Usually what happens is that starts to slide. They win games they shouldn't because they pull it out with their skill. And instead of that being a wake-up call, they just continue to go down that road until they get a little bit lost. And we're seeing the Winnipeg Jets in one of those stretches where they're lost right now.
Do you think, as you mentioned, I think it's been January the last 2 years where this team's really slid, and now we're obviously in December, I guess back half of November. Do you think that this team will recognize that they are slipping and that they have to kind of go back to what's worked to have basically the best start in NHL history? Do you think this group will finally maybe learn what they maybe didn't learn in the past couple of years?
Well, I take a look at it, and I think what the Jets did in the first 20 games of the year, you can't do that for the entire year. And I'll say this, what I see around the league when I see teams like, Florida's really doing it a lot. Dallas, I felt that was doing it earlier in the year. Vegas, you saw them beat the Edmonton Oilers 1-0. These really good teams, what I find that you're seeing is they're getting up for the big games, right? Like for a perfect example, when the Jets were rolling, what kind of took them out of things was when they played Florida, and Florida really kind of gave them a spanking a couple of weeks back on Hockey Night in Canada. And then Florida followed that up, lost games, I believe, to St. Louis and Chicago. And then kind of looks like, okay, well, they look lost again until they play Carolina, one team that everyone is thinking is maybe the best in the league, and they spank them for two straight games. And like I said, Vegas pops up and beats Edmonton 1-0. Like, what I feel like I'm seeing around the league is an understanding with a lot of these teams of, listen, there's certain games we really need to get up for, and then the rest of them we may not have everything that we have, because let's be honest with ourselves, there's no point in going crazy for 82 games and then being tired come playoff time. So I think there's a lesson in there for the Jets. I think that's a lesson they've struggled with quite a bit over the last number of years, because they're the kind of team that doesn't have the ability, in my mind, to turn it on and turn it off. When they turn it off, they lose it. So that's the struggle for the Winnipeg Jets, is to find a way to get to the playoffs while still having, enough energy to succeed in the playoffs, but finding a way to manage that energy level throughout the year without just losing it entirely.
Does it feel like being around the team day in and day out that it is a bit of a different group or vibe than maybe years past?
It feels like the exact same team to me as last year, like exact same team. I mean, outside of the back end of last year, when you add Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli, who I think there's a recognition on all sides that that really just was not a fit for the Jets. Sean Monahan seemed to be a really good fit. You can see now that there's no fluke to what he did last year. Marty St. Louis in Montreal helped him rediscover his game. A lot of it just has to do with the fact he's healthy. But Sean Monahan is now the player Sean Monahan used to be and always should have been without getting beaten up by all those injuries. But I mean, the Jets started this year basically with the same front 12 as they had last year. Four of six returning defensemen. So you're replacing a sixth defenseman and a third defenseman, and Dylan Samberg was ready to move into that third slash fourth defenseman spot. So it's the same team, different coaching staff, but a coaching staff that is still running a system that's built on the system that Rick Bowness brought to this team. So there's been some tweaks. Clearly, they've got a better power play. But mindset of the team, I mean, this core has been together for a long time. The Josh Morrissey's, the Kyle Connors, the Connor Hellebuck's, the Mark Scheifele's, like the very nucleus of this team has been intact essentially since back in 2018, when I think they were the best team in the NHL and just couldn't find a way to prove that by winning a Stanley Cup. But this nucleus, if you take a look at it, there's not a lot of teams outside like the Pittsburgh Penguins who've kept that nucleus, and a nucleus of that many guys, throwing Nikolaj Ehlers in there, right? A nucleus of players that have been together that long. Adam Lowry, let's throw him in there. But yeah, this team has, I mean, this is maybe the most apt example in the NHL of a team that is trying to learn, and they're not tearing it apart. They're giving the same group chance after chance after chance after chance to prove that it can find, the secret sauce that it has not been able to find. Outside of Blake Wheeler leaving, the very, very core of this team has stayed intact now, and it's going on, 6, 7, 8 years.
I guess with that, it felt as though from afar that last season felt as though heading into the playoffs, this team could maybe contend for a Stanley Cup, maybe not in that inner core of teams that really you'd think, okay, they can win the cup, but they were kind of on that precipice. Obviously, you mentioned they added Monahan and Toffoli. Like, how close is this team to maybe pushing for a cup, and what maybe do they need to add to either to the core just for, as you mentioned, maybe their mentality and kind of sticking to the hard-nosed hockey, but also just talent-wise as well.
So clearly, this will be just opinion, because if I knew that answer, I would be working for the Winnipeg Jets and I would be making a lot of money right now, because that's the question that has been asked within this ownership group, within the management group for years, and they cannot seem to figure out that answer. I mean, I think there's two ways you look at this. I think either the Winnipeg Jets are a great team in waiting that just can't seem to figure something out, or they're a really, really good team that when games elevate, they just do not have the personnel to follow, right? And so last season, you know, that is potentially an example of the latter, right? Like, okay, so you've got Mark Scheifele, great player, Kyle Connor, Josh Morrissey. I'm big on suggesting he's one of the top five defensemen in the NHL. Connor Hellebuck, it's hard to argue that he's not the best goaltender in the NHL. But they went against a guy like Nathan MacKinnon, who is a Hart Trophy winner. And then, you know, you've got Arturi Lehkonen, who's just this playoff savant. Rantanen, Cale Makar, the best defenseman in the game. Those guys just went to a place that the Winnipeg Jets could not follow, could not follow. And so, that becomes the big question. Are the Jets missing something? Is just a mindset thing that is leading to them going to the playoffs and not just losing? But I mean, the Jets were the fourth best team in the NHL last year, and then they went into the playoffs and looked like they were maybe the least competitive team in the West. How that happens, if it is a mind thing, it is a massive mind thing, because they did not compete in the way that anyone thought that they could compete.
Maybe I feel like for the past, I guess since 2019, a lot of teams look at the St. Louis Blues as maybe like, okay, we don't have Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, but you know, our team is just built kind of with depth and just really good players spread out throughout our lineup. Is that maybe the prototype for this team to be successful? Because that Blues team, until they had won, had been a very good regular season team for a long time and then finally broke through. But you could also say, you know, it was a bit of an anomaly. They got on that crazy heater, obviously beat the Jets in the first round that year as well, which was a really good Jets team. I'm just curious what you think, if that is maybe their prototype to kind of go to the next level.
Yeah, I think like Ryan O'Reilly was the add to that team that kind of took things to another level. And it was that perfect marriage of, I mean, we think of Ryan O'Reilly now as like that player that, well, you want to go get that guy. He knows how to get you over the top. But if you remember before that, Ryan O'Reilly was that guy who kind of bounced around the league and, you know, was spending time in Buffalo, and people thought that he couldn't get it done, right? So it ended up being that perfect marriage of the guy who is actually the guy who could get you over the top, but looked like the guy who couldn't get it done. And that team that was always really hard and competitive, but couldn't quite get it done. I mean, throw some magical goaltending in there. Binnington, if you remember that season, Binnington started the year in the minors and came up and kind of helped that team take over. So it was. That's a little bit of the perfect storm. Now we forget that the year after that, you know, when everything kind of gets shut down by COVID, the Blues are leading the West in scoring, and then sorry, not in scoring, in they're the first place team in the West, and then everything gets shut down, and we have the bubble, and they crash out of the bubble, and then never really recover. So they really were a shooting star, and getting up like that. I have a hard time comparing them to the Winnipeg Jets, because the Blues always had a style that was problematic for them in the way that I remember covering them and the Chicago Blackhawks. I think they went to the conference final one year against San Jose. I believe it's
Yes.
the year San Jose loses to Pittsburgh in the Cup final, and I'd covered their first round series there. And you could just see everything that St. Louis did was a war, and it was a battle of attrition. And I just think they always got tired. And so one of the things I think is that the St. Louis Blues really hadn't expended a lot of energy. They were last place in the NHL by the new year, and then ended up coming roaring back, making the playoffs. But they essentially gave away half a season of not playing the kind of style of St. Louis Blues hockey that made them who they were. So it's almost like they we had that conversation about teams conserving energy and finding a way to have, well, maybe that's what happened that year with the St. Louis Blues, because I do remember covered them. They beat the Jets in the first round, 6 games. They beat Dallas next, and that went 7 games double overtime. But what I noticed in every series that that Blues team played, even in the final against the Boston Bruins, they just by the end of it, they kind of left no doubt about it who was the better team in that series. They wore their opposition down. So in the end, they win that cup in a very St. Louis Blues way. But if the St. Louis Blues are playing the way for the entire year, the way they did from Christmas, or sorry, from New Year's until the end of the season, I wonder if they have enough energy left to do what they did in the playoffs. It could just be that, making the coaching change and adding some fresh players and not really getting their legs going until the new year is actually what saved them for the time of year that they needed to be best.
I feel it's kind of interesting that when you look back at the Jets playoff round, it kind of runs the past couple of years, that Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been his best self. I wouldn't have said he's been terrible. His numbers might look, less flattering than maybe his actual play on the ice with the eye test. But what do you think maybe it's like, how do you think this team's approaching how many starts he's playing? Because he's a workhorse, as you know.
Yeah.
Is that something that maybe they're going to try to change a little bit? It doesn't seem like they're playing Comrie that much compared to Brossoit in previous years. So how much do you think that could maybe help the Jets in the playoffs if they play Hellebuck a bit less?
Well, the one thing at the start you talked about, and I noticed you did what a lot of people always do. Like, there is a real effort at all times to protect Connor Hellebuck. Because he's so good and because he does so many amazing things, people will always try and kind of pin the blame somewhere else in the playoffs. The fact of the matter is, Connor Hellebuyck has never really come out and been a playoff goaltender. There's not that. I mean, they go to the 2018 conference final. He clearly gets outdueled by Fleury in that series. He makes a lot of crucial puck handling mistakes that has them lose that series. The goalies that he has outdueled in the playoffs in his career are goalies that really weren't around that much longer. So his book on goalies has been, Carey Price clearly outdid him when they got to that series against Montreal, where everyone thought, okay, it's a clear path now for the Winnipeg Jets. And then Carey Price clearly outdueled him. Last year, Alexander Georgiev clearly outdueled Connor Hellebuyck, and that seemed crazy. And I'll always say this: people point to these stats that show that Connor Hellebuyck's a great goaltender, goals saved above expected, and those kind of things. I think he was last in the playoffs last year, at least in the first round. And it's in that, so you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't hold up this stat to tell me Connor Hellebuyck's the best goalie in the world and then ignore that stat when you're trying to say that he's not struggling in the playoffs. So the question you're asking is he being overused? I mean, it could be. You've never ever really had an example of managing his workload to see if that would help. And it was kind of crazy last year, I thought, was just the craziest example of that. I know Rick Bowness had said what he was going to do was he was going to try to find rest for Connor Hellebuyck within the season, make his workload less in games, give ha more stretches where he just wasn't having to stop a lot of pucks. Great idea in theory, but I still think if you're putting a goalie out for that many games, there's still workouts involved. There's a mental strain to that. All those different kind of things. Last year, Lauren Brossoit's numbers were as good as Connor Hellebuck's. And now he didn't play as much. That's not a comment of me saying he's as good of a goaltender, although add Lauren Brossoit into the list of goaltenders that have outdueled Connor Hellebuyck in the playoffs and had better numbers and better stats in the process when he was the goaltender for the Vegas Golden Knights when they eliminated the Jets. But last year was a year they could have really, really gone and relied a lot more on Lauren Brossoit. In fact, I thought he deserved more time. The fact that he didn't get his name on the Jennings Trophy, I thought was a massive oversight by the Winnipeg Jets. He deserved it. He was phenomenal last year. So if they weren't going to try it last year, I don't know that they ever are. You're not going to see it this year because they're riding Connor Hellebuyck the same way that they do, and he's going to be the goaltender for the U.S. at the Four Nations Cup. So this will not be the year that we see if load management helps Connor Hellebuyck. It's gonna have to be him trying to find a way to get over the hump. If it is that, Alex, if it is that he's being overworked, we may never find the answer because they may not give an example of lessening his load to see if that's what it is.
Do you think maybe some of, their this team's inability to kind of put good stretches together at the tail end of the season has something to do with him just being overworked as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not putting it out there. I don't want to like point the finger at him because quite honestly, there's not a lot. I mean, I'm telling you this, you hear there when I say these things, people don't question Connor Hellebuyck in Winnipeg. They just don't. It's like you just leave him alone and you just, So when I do this kind of stuff, I really go against the grain in this market and people get really mad when you suggest when you put out there that there may be a weakness with Connor Hellebuyck, people get really, really incensed with that, right? So a lot of times people think that I'm, attacking the guy. I'm telling you right now, covering this guy, it's hard for me to say that he's the problem because it is very, very few games that I ever cover in a season that you would ever say, yeah, I think he contributed to the loss. Like last night, they lose that game, and there's nothing that you're pinning on Connor Hellebuyck. Like he lets some goals in and they get in, but he also made a lot of saves that keep that game close, close enough to give the Jets a chance at some point. But the Jets do seem to run out of steam at the end of the year, although they did go into the playoffs last year with an 8-game winning streak. But this goes way back. I remember the year we're talking about where there was the Canadian division. The Jets were this team that rarely, rarely lost 2 games back to back. And then at the tail end of the year, right before they go into the playoffs, they lost, I believe it was 7 straight or 7 out of 11 or something like that. And then went into the playoffs and swept the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid, right? And then turned around and got swept and looked like they were out of place in a series against the Montreal Canadiens. Like to me, tired would suggest that you fall and you can't get up. The Winnipeg Jets are just like a stock that you better sell high because they are sharply up and sharply down, and you kind of never know when it's going to come.
Is Kyle Connor maybe that stock that everyone should buy, but no one does in a sense around the league? Like it feels like he's one of the most underrated players. Obviously, I don't think he is in Winnipeg, but just around the league, consistently a perennial 30, 40 goal scorer. And it feels like no one really knows about him outside of Winnipeg.
Yeah, I always hear this, and then I've done this story on Hockey Night in Canada before. If you take a look at their numbers, Connor Hellebuyck is Jake Guentzel. They're the exact same player, right? They even kind of look alike, and they're American, and they've got like similar body types, and like their numbers are exactly the same. So this always happens, and when you're talking about that stock, Kyle Connor starts the year every year, like he's going to win the Rocket Richard Trophy, and then something happens. Last year it was injury. This year he's kind of tailed off a little bit. Doesn't mean he can't get hot and jump back into that race, but Kyle Connor is well, like quite often will force his way into the spotlight. And I can't tell you how many times I get asked this question: "Oh, is he underrated?" And this and that. And my answer to that is no. Kyle Connor has had, like, you can't be underrated if you grab the spotlight and you never let it go. You can't be. I don't care who you are. If you just keep performing and are one of the very top people every single year, year after year, you can't be underrated. People don't talk about Jake Guentzel like, is he the most underrated guy in the league? When he came up last year in trade discussions, it's like really, really blue chip guy to go get. And when he was, re-signed in the offseason with Tampa Bay, people recognize that that's a really big add, but no one's going and lamenting that Jake Guentzel is underrated and isn't given his due. And part of that would have to do with the fact that Jake Guentzel played a lot of his career beside Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang. So when you're like the fourth best guy on your team, it's hard to look at a guy and be like, man, he's underrated, right? Well, I still believe, Kyle Connor's leading the Jets in scoring. I still believe Mark Scheifele is their best player. I think if you're taking the in order of importance, I think Josh Morrissey is a more important player. Connor Hellebuyck is clearly a more important player. So you're talking about Kyle Connor being third or fourth in importance on the Winnipeg Jets. These are things that contribute to people not looking at someone and being like, this is the guy. Hey, it's a controversial take in Winnipeg. Kyle Connor is not underrated the same way we're not screaming for Jake Guentzel to get more of a spotlight in the NHL.
I always find it interesting, and maybe I'm just on Ehlers Island sometimes with a lot of, I think, Jets Twitter that I see, but just that he's, people say he's underused. His obviously his time on ice is maybe not resembling the fact of how much he carries the play. He is, as you know, an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Like, what are the chances that the Jets keep this marriage that feels a bit bumpy over the past couple of years together, and or what's the chances that it might split? And I just w what have you heard, or what do you think being around the team for the past couple of years?
So I've said this, and I've said it since the beginning. I think that Nikolaj Ehlers is gone. But like I couched that by saying I also thought Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck were gone. Now I always couch that by saying I had this funny conversation with Andrew Kopp, who is one of Mark Scheifele's best friends. And Andrew Kopp fully expected Mark Scheifele to be gone, to the point he tells me this story where he was in a team meeting, a leadership meeting, because he wears an A in Detroit, was in a leadership meeting and got out of the meeting, and his teammates were like, hey, Scheif just re-signed in Winnipeg for like 8 years. And he was like, yeah, ha, very funny. And they're like, no, seriously, he re-signed. And he's like, I'm like his best friend. I've been talking with him. I know he's not re-signing in Winnipeg. And then he went and grabbed his phone out of his jacket pocket and looked, and Scheif had messaged him and said, hey, I re-signed. So we didn't think that was going to happen, but Mark didn't think that was going to happen. Mark's friends and family didn't think that was going to happen. So my take on Nikolaj Ehlers is I do think he's underutilized. Now, Rick Bowness made a compelling argument last year about the ice time thing that you're talking about. Nick is a burner. He gets on the ice, he goes as hard and fast as he can, and then he gets off the ice. And it's actually a really helpful tool for the team. There's been really good examples this year. There's this great play that Kyle Connor scores where Nikolaj Ehlers leads the puck in on a rush, passes it, it gets turned over. He gets the puck back with the defenders facing the wrong way, right? They're in the attack mode, they're leaving. He turns over the puck, gets it down low. And instead of hanging around to capitalize on the chaos that he's created, he turns around and skates straight off the ice. Kyle Connor hops on, gets out on the ice, gets the pass, and shoots it in the back of the net, right? Like that, it's helpful when you've got that guy who's using all his energy to create a great situation and then goes and hands it off to the next guy who's got all that fresh energy. That's what he does well. But it also means that he doesn't get as much ice time as most other players, because most other players hang around and don't do the same thing, and they'll use up all their energy and they'll get off when they're a little bit tired. It's a way of saying Nick Ehlers, his shifts usually are in line with all the best players on the team. His shift length is just shorter. But I have thought in the past, okay, if that's your reasoning, if he's conserving himself, maybe you need to get him onto the ice in more in-game situations, double shift him here or there, get him out, try and catch the opposition unaware with that speed. Scott Arneil has really made it a focus to try and do that this season, and it's paying off, right? Like he's a I think he's a point per game player right now. He's on the first power play. If you want to know why the Winnipeg Jets power play struggled last year and is now exploding this year, he's a huge part of it. A real driver for his line. If the Jets do keep him, it will be because Scott Arneil has shown him, we get it. We get what you should be and how we should use you. I just don't know that that excuses a really long runway of him not being used the way that a lot of people think he should have been used, but most importantly, how he feels that he should have been used. I mean, there's a lot of teams around the league that would look at Nikolaj Ehlers and say, listen, we think we could use you, and we think you could use you like this. And because He was underutilized, I think, in his own mind for so long. It's hard not to be go to unrestricted free agency and hear those pitches from people. Hey, Carolina Hurricanes, what do you think of me? Boston Bruins, whoever you are. And I don't say those teams specifically for any reason, but if you're out there and you're saying, Nick, we think you're great. This is why we think you're great. And this is how we would like to use you. That to me would be extremely attractive for a player that has spent too long of his career not being used to the maximum of his abilities.
Do you think it, in any ways that the Jets could be the team maybe that desperately like needs him the most and is maybe the most desperate for him and might be overpays because obviously, as you know, Winnipeg doesn't really get many players in free agency. Like, could that be a scenario? I'm just curious.
It could. I would say no. Like if you take a look at the Winnipeg Jets, the one thing that, in a market where everyone says, and I get this, when you get people who drop in and they don't really know the market and they give you your analysis and they're like, oh, you got to pay the Winnipeg tax, to get guys to stay there and whatever. Go look at like Connor Hellebuyck. Everyone thought that he was going to be making what, 8 figures a year. That did not happen. He signed for a very manageable contract, and now you've got guys like Linus Ullmark making the same number as him, and Swayman, and a lot of these goaltenders who have not put up what Connor Hellebuyck has put up in their career. He set a really, really low standard, kind of reset the goalie market, and I think made it harder for guys to make that money. Mark Scheifele, I think, is a good number. I like that. Take a look at what Josh Morrissey is making. Like up and down this lineup, you take a look at. I can't really think of a player that the Winnipeg Jets have overpaid. A couple come to mind. Blake Wheeler is probably overpaid, but that's one of those things where you buy years, and they were okay to buy those years because the vast majority of time Blake Wheeler was in Winnipeg, he was grossly underpaid. Brian Little is a guy that they paid too much on the back end of his contract, but then again, it's like a years of service thing. But the Jets don't make a habit of paying guys to stick around. And if you were going to overpay Nikolaj Ehlers to the degree that maybe he like ends up with as much or more money than Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck, then I think you start to create those imbalances within the dressing room. The Jets have done a really good job of prioritizing and being like, listen, this is our guy, and you're not going to make more money than that guy. And the tricky part is, okay, well, let's say you do that. You go out and you overpay Nikolaj Ehlers. Well, guess who's up the year after that? Kyle Connor. And Kyle Connor is the guy who I could see the Jets being the next guy they sign long term because, they have prioritized him the entire time he's been in Winnipeg. I could see him wanting to be a lifelong Winnipeg Jet. But what I couldn't see is them going out of their way to overpay Nikolaj Ehlers and then Kyle Connor being like, yeah, it's all right. I'll take a hometown discount. I think once you open that door, that players are going to follow. The Jets have never really opened that door, and I don't see them doing it for Nick Ehlers.
With that, like if they lose Ehlers and just maybe, you talked about this core being intact for a long time. Obviously, you alluded to Kyle Connor potentially staying, but also he's a free agent in a year from now. Like, is this the year? Is this like the year where they need to go all in just to try to make a cup push? Or do you think that they can sustain this core and keep winning at a consistent level like they have in the past couple of years?
Oh, like this is, like I said, this is a long time to keep a core together. Like what the Winnipeg Jets have done, and you can see to your point, they don't add free agents. So what they've done is they've prioritized their own and found a way to do so. It feels like things could get tricky this year because Neil Pionk is up, and Vladislav Namestnikov is up, and there's a number of players that the Jets are going to have to take care of if they're going to stick around. And if they lose those players, it's typically going to be building from within if you're the Winnipeg Jets, or sneaking around. Never forget this, like sneaking around and finding value. Like they went out and they found Niederreiter, who'd been bouncing around the league, and when he gets here and he's used properly, you question how the heck did that guy ever get left to bounce around the league like that. Vladislav Namestnikov was a player that I thought was a great player when I first saw him in 2015, and then he seemed to get lost around the league, and I always kind of questioned what happened. And the Jets saw, knew it was still there, brought him back, and ends up being like a really good player for them. So they're good at finding that kind of value. It's pretty hard at this stage to count Kevin Cheveldayoff out because he typically goes and finds a way to solve these problems. A lot of times it doesn't look like a solution, and then you see that it is a solution. Like Namestnikov, I don't think a lot of people thought was a solution. Jeez, he started the game last night as their number one center, and has been playing as their 2C throughout this entire year. So, okay, so I've said all that. Now, this is again the core of this team, and I said like 7 or 8 years, but to be honest, like you're talking about Kyle Connor kind of is the last of those core guys to get in, and he's drafted in 2015, so he's significant with the team, I believe, by 2017. So to me, that's the point you can rewind, and this core has been together for that entire time. To be together that long means guys are getting older. So Hellebuck, 30, Mark Scheifele, 30, Adam Lowry, 30. There's a time like this that you look at these players, and I know a lot of people talk about Mark Scheifele. He's really in shape. They think he'll be one of those guys who lasts a really long time. I think they're right about that. But when you're at 30, you got to think that a lot of these players are, if they're not on the back side of their career, they're definitely teetering on the peak of their career. So how many more years you have of this, I don't know. You're locked up with Hellebuck and Scheifele for another 8 years. And there's not a clear cut 1C following behind Mark Scheifele. So I think you have to just look at this and think like the next 3 years are crucial. Will they be all in this year? I think so. They were all in last year. I think they'll be all in again next year. But the Jets have this way of being all in without seeming to, entirely empty the cupboards. That they held on to Rutger last year, turned Rutger into Jaeger or Jaeger. And so. But I don't know how long you'll get away with that. And maybe the question is, if you're going to be all in, maybe you need to be all in with a splash to the point that it does take bargaining your future for the present, because Jets have at times got, they went in all in back in 2019 when they brought in Kevin Hayes. That clearly didn't work. So, like, maybe to get over the top, instead of trying to find that sneaky right guy, you just have to go pay the price for the right guy. And if that means that you're giving away, some of your best prospects, maybe that's what you have to do. That's the one thing we've never seen the Jets do that other teams do. We've never seen the Jets completely and totally go all in. Their version is a very cautious all in, and maybe that's what's missing.
Yeah, I still think about Mark Stone potentially going to Winnipeg that year, and he's obviously, I think he's from Winnipeg as well. He's definitely a Manitoban, and that would have just, look good with you.
And the word is the holdup on that was Jack Roslovic, right? And Jack Roslovic ended up being, a top. Now, hey, Jack Roslovic is doing amazing this year. How many years later is that? But Jack Roslovic was a toss in the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. And so, I mean, at that time, moving him to think that they had the opportunity for Mark Stone and may have missed out on it because they weren't willing to part with Jack Roslovic is that would be a perfect example, Alex, of not going absolutely all in for trying to protect your future.
I don't believe in kind of this version of how people look at Winnipeg and the city and the fan base, but obviously you're there and attendance has gone down the past couple of years. Like, what do you th I've read so many theories about this, but I kind of want to hear your perspective about the fan base of late and specifically attendance, because it's gone down and it doesn't seem to be like Winnipeg in my mind probably is the best hockey town in the world right now, and I just don't understand. I can't make sense of it. So I
Yeah.
wanted to kind of give you kind of the floor on this one.
Yeah, theories. I go by what the fans tell me, and the fans have told me the same thing for a long time. So first off, give Winnipeg its props. This is a team that sold out its barn through bad teams and good teams for like a decade without the organization having to try, right? Like you just get to say, hey, there's tickets for sale and they're sold. You don't have to advertise. You don't have to do anything. The Jets fans wave their money at you. And through that entire time, concessions went up and ticket prices went up, and there was never any complaints. Jets fans just kept showing up and supporting their team, being one of the loudest barns when you get in there, despite being one of the smallest barns. Give Winnipeg Jets fans their props. The Winnipeg Jets fans are true hockey fans. I will always fight to the death for Jets fans. Now, as I said that, no, that I the Jets fans will tell you, prices went up incessantly. There was no really kind of like loyalty programs that were a payoff or a little bit of a gift. The Calgary Flames, I remember a couple of years ago, were selling season tickets and you got a new jersey, right? With that. That kind of stuff never happened with the Winnipeg Jets. And those things, it's not like it's like, well, I need a new jersey, so I'm going to go buy tickets. It's just those little things that say, thank you. We appreciate you. And I just heard too many stories because there was this long lineup of fans trying to get into the building. I heard these too many stories from fans who were, like had foregone buying a car. Because they'd put their money towards Jets tickets and like massive things. And hey, I would have had my mortgage paid off 4 years earlier, 5 years earlier, if I hadn't been a 10-year Winnipeg Jets season ticket holder. Like these are the sacrifices
Wow.
when you look at it that fans are making to support their teams. Those are massive sacrifices, and those sacrifices should be thanked. It should be, anything that you can do to keep those people happy. And I just saw too many stories of people who had issues. I don't want to get into some of them, because some of them are pretty heavy, but people with like health issues that were like, hey, I can't get to the game. Can you help me out here? Or I know that someone for discomfort caused by, a significant issue that they had, they'd been a season ticket owner since the beginning, and they knew people at the end of their row who were leaving their tickets, and he just wanted to switch his tickets to those end of the row tickets because it was excruciating pain for them to do that upright walk to get to the middle of the row, and they were a little bit older. And can you just, we'll switch our tickets there. And the thing that you'll hear time and again, and I think it's when Mark Chipman talked about it, he'd said they didn't have a customer service department or whatever it was that he talked about. This to me is what he meant. And I think that there should have been a more airing of this and a flushing out of this. What he meant was when people called with problems, people who had foregone vehicles and mortgage payments and, maybe, are struggling, or their kids had to take out student loans because they couldn't throw their money towards that kind of thing. Those people, time and again, were essentially told, listen, there's people waiting to get in the building. If you don't like it, you can leave. They'll get in. And that works until you don't have a lineup anymore. And the lineup disappeared after a while. And now what you have left over is a whole bunch of jaded fans who feel like they were not appreciated by the team that they had sacrificed so much for. So where I think the market is right now is that fan base feels like they were threatened to get back in the building because there was a ticket campaign that made some kind of allusion to it only works if you come here, they only stay here if you come here. That ticket campaign for the playoffs 2 years ago was roundly seen as a disaster and a huge mistake. I think it's been acknowledged, quietly within the organization. It was a mistake. But that message was sent out to fans. And to be honest, when Mark Chipman came out and spoke to the to not in the market, but took that to a conversation to be had on the national level, and basically went and talked to the fans, or sorry, just said, this just isn't going to work. It just isn't. He'd said later on, he tried to clarify and said, well, we can't, it's not going to work that we can be a team that spends to the cap all the time. But that was taken again as a threat that they were going to leave the market. And I do think that there was a feeling from fans that rather than having the conversation in Winnipeg and talking to the Winnipeg Free Press or the local media and like having, rather than going and taking that to national media figures and having that conversation, I think fans felt like they had someone had gone and tattled on them, right? You'd been these great fans for years, and the person that you'd been so good to had gone away out of the market to, on a loudspeaker, tell the country that the fans aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. To me, this is fans who gave their all felt like they were not appreciated, and rather than there being a conversation and saying, okay, like any business should, a business should serve its customers, saying, okay, we feel like we lost you there. What did we do wrong? How can we make it better? And what can we do going forward? That conversation has never happened. There's a lot of people waiting for that conversation to happen. And until it happens, and even if it did happen, because it's taken so long for it to happen, I think that you're going to see the issues that you see, because there's just too many people out there who know how much money that is to spend and don't feel like their money is appreciated when it's spent.
I might sound really naive, but why aren't they doing something with
I
the
don't know.
fans?
I don't know. I mean, they are now the Winnipeg Jets game day experience, the way they reach out to fans, the way they reward fans, that's changed, right? So the, in their actions, the Winnipeg Jets as a franchise are showing this. They're showing it in their actions, and a lot of people will say action speaks louder than words, and it typically does. But I don't think that there's ever been an out loud acknowledgement that, listen, you guys were the best. We should have treated you better, and we didn't, and we messed up. Like, I don't know if you heard that message, but when the conversation has happened at the national level with Mark Chipman, when he talked about the fans, I never heard that message. And I don't know that I've heard that message from anyone on the team. And one thing I can tell you is talking, I get fans walking up to me in the grocery store talking to me about this kind of stuff, and the story's always the same. I used to be a fan for a whole bunch of years, blah blah blah. I had this little bit of an issue, was basically told, go, you know what, sorry, just step out of the way, there's someone waiting for your seats. That was, to me, if you, that exact situation playing out over and over and over again, I've got an issue, too bad, there's someone waiting for your seat, that will explain to you what's going on in the stands in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make complete parallels, but when I was growing up here in Ottawa, the team was successful. I think they made the playoffs 11 straight years, but they were number one, two, three in attendance, which is crazy
Yeah.
that they don't have, you know, they're definitely at the bottom of the barrel now in the NHL. And for whatever reason, they, you know, ownership did not treat the fans well. You can even talk to fans now in Ottawa and they'll say, well, you know, I don't want to go. I had a bad experience with how the team kind of reached out to their fans and a bunch of, and we can go on and on, but it takes a toll, right? And then you're trying to galvanize people to go to the games. Obviously, Ottawa has an arena outside the city, unlike Winnipeg, of course, downtown. But overall, you can see it here. And I think maybe for a decade of maybe ownership really not reaching out and kind of trying to galvanize and help people feel like they're wanted at these games.
Yeah.
I think we see the toll, even though the team obviously isn't as good as they should be, but you know, there's a new ownership and you can still see the effects from 10, 15 years of disenfranchisement.
I think, you know, we're in a new era too, right? Like the way that inflation has gone, it's hard for people to make ends meet, and the way ticket prices have gone, being a fan is no longer casual, right? Like when I was a kid, my dad could go and he could pick up tickets for $15, right? And, you know, I lived an hour outside of the city, and, you know, my dad would pick up tickets. We'd stop and buy them. I think it's Safeway or something like that. You know, it was like easy to get. They were cheap. Walk in, go watch the game, do your thing. Like it wasn't a big deal. You know, now you take a family of four to the game, it's heavy. You buy season tickets. Like I said, you are foregoing major life purchases to be a fan of that team. And so the thing about that is, if you want to treat fans like that and they're paying $15 for a ticket, you know what? You lose that guy, someone else is going to come along because it's casual. It's casual viewing. If you can be a casual fan, you cannot be a casual fan anymore, which means that anytime you find someone who is willing to make the deep, deep investment it takes now to be a fan in a major league sports team, you have to realize that you have that customer is special because there's not a lot of people out there who can make the investment required to be a pro sports fan who shows up in the buildings not just once, twice, but a number of times. You have to treat that as though it's sacred. And when teams don't, the fans are the ones who feel that burden. They feel the pain. They're the ones that are like, geez, I can't. I just got paid and my bills are in and I've got like no money left. So for the next 2 weeks, I'm doing nothing. When you're making that sacrifice and you feel like that sacrifice is not at all being recognized or worse, disrespected, that you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble.
I'm curious because in Ottawa, at least the past 2 years with Ann Lauer at the helm, like even I think it was yesterday, they had an event where they took down the banners for Phillips, Alfredson, and Neil, who have their jerseys retired, and people could take pictures. And is there anything like that going on in Winnipeg at all with in terms of season ticket holders? I'm just curious.
I can't say specifics. I know that there's an effort right now to really, really
Okay.
reward fans. And so they're doing that. Like the Jets are trying to make amends, and again, with their actions, they are fully trying to make amends. But I like, listen, this is like, I remember I always used to say this. There was a point because Winnipeg never really had in-game promotions, right? There was just not anything going on. You'd go to these different buildings and there'd be like they'd be dropping stuff from the ceiling and all this kind of crazy stuff would be going on. That's one thing the Jets do now is they invest in in-game promotions. They never used to do it. And when asked about the game day experience and how kind of stripped bare it was compared to other places, Mark Chipman had said, well, our fans are just such good fans. They don't need that stuff. And I always used to say, that's like saying my wife is just this really great wife. She doesn't need flowers or gifts to tell her she's special. It's like when they're like that, that's when you reward them most. It's not, oh, I don't need to pay them attention. They're great anyways. That's not a recipe for a great marriage. So yeah.
Exactly. Before I let you go, I was trying to do this at the beginning of the show, but we got just so entrapped with Jets talk. But I
Yeah.
want to talk a bit about your career, and we were talking about it before the show that I don't know how much you've talked about this on Kenny. I haven't listened or heard when you've maybe mentioned this, but that you had a roofing company, you're in construction, and now you're obviously on Hockey Night in Canada. What, just maybe talk a little bit about your interesting pathway to get to where you are right now in the industry.
Yeah, I'll try and do it quick. I've told the story before. When I was in high school, I took one of those aptitude tests and it said that I should be a journalist. And so I thought that was interesting, but I'm from a small town called Lac-Da-Bonnie in Manitoba. And just not a lot of people seem to get out of that town, right? So the idea of doing something like to me, I thought a journalist, wow, what a big city job. That's way beyond what I could ever become, right? And so my parents were both phys ed teachers, so I went to university and started to become a phys ed teacher. And in order to put myself through school, I would work construction jobs in the summertime, to the point that I did it so much that I got to be pretty good at construction, and got into teaching with student teaching, hated it. And decided to get out of that. So was doing full-time construction. And out of that, ended up starting my own roofing company, which helped put me through, continue to put me through school because I basically took a year off. And I've told this, or actually Ron has alluded to it on Hockey Night in Canada before. I was out in Golden, BC, working an industrial construction job, building a bridge over the Kicking Horse River. And it's like 120 20 feet up over this gorge, and fell off the bridge,
My
and
God.
got caught by my fall arrest. But all of the when I'd fallen, I was dangling underneath the bridge and no one could see me. So they enacted all the things that you do on a job site when someone's passed away on the job site. My brother-in-law was working on the job site and was told that I had fallen and been killed,
Oh my
as
goodness.
I was dangling under the bridge, and then ended up like kind of climbing this rope that was holding me. And after a couple of minutes, because no one was coming for me, and then kind of got up anyways. It was this kind of near death experience that it wasn't like this epiphany and this waking up, but it was a definite like this moment of, okay, well, that was close. And if that was it, I probably would have felt like I really didn't do anything that I wanted to do in life. So it was one of those moments where after that I was like, well, what do I like doing? And what I did all the time was I just got home, I looked up hockey stats, I looked things up, I would like write little kind of like articles to myself and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this is what I'm doing just for me, for fun. And even then that wasn't the driving factor, but what I would do is I would sit around and I would have beers with my friends and all these kind of things, and we would talk sports and we would talk hockey. And invariably I would be with a group of people, and halfway through the conversation someone would be like, you should really do this for a living, right? And enough people said it that like that external validation, I never would have thought to do it, but that external validation was like, well, that actually would be fun, and people keep saying I should do that. So I quit my job, moved home to my small town, wrote some articles for the local paper, used that as a portfolio to apply for Ryerson, which is now Toronto Metropolitan University. Got in, one of the very few people from Manitoba to get into that program, and then came out, worked news for a number of years until I got this job at Sportsnet. And so that was the path that I took to get here. Yeah.
How much did you, when you were in news, wanting did you want to become a sports journalist? Like, was that clear, or did you have a path to be a news reporter for a long time as well?
Yeah, so you'll understand this because, I mean, you're working a job and yet you're also writing for Sportsnet with the Ottawa Senators. The path has really changed. So when I came in, the path was still to a degree, get a job in a local newsroom. My first job was at Sportsnet, cutting highlights and things like that. And they had identified me at that time as someone who could like move up the ladder there. And I said, well, can I move up the ladder on air? And they said, well, no, that doesn't happen. You got to go into the boonies. Now, the funny part about that is within a couple of years after that happens, Sean McKenzie and Kyle Bukauskas come along and go straight from school onto camera, after I'd been told, that didn't happen. Those two guys, taking that path, that was a very new thing at that time. So I'd left and gone, got a job in Winnipeg, and that was just a fluke. I wasn't targeting. That was the only place I could get a job across the country. Just happened to be in my hometown, and got into news. And the plan was always like, well, I'm just going to keep honing my skills and getting better and better and kind of climbing the ladder. And then at some point, as soon as a spot moves up in sports, I'll jump in there. Sports newsrooms were dying at that time. So when people left, it didn't open up a chair, the chair just disappeared. And so I kind of was just looking around and seeing that there were really no opportunities happening. So in the meantime, I kept climbing and climbing and climbing in the news world. I ended up being the late night news host at CBC in Manitoba. I was very, very close to getting the national job, with CBC National
Wow.
representing the Winnipeg market. Cam McIntosh, a good friend of mine, beat me out for that job, and he does a great job there. Still does that job. Again, a chair that, like, once it's filled, it's hard to get in there. And had some auditions with I'll quickly tell a story. I was called one time, when I was working at CBC, by the guy running the newsroom at Sportsnet, and he called me up and said, listen, we love your stuff. How quickly can you be here? We'd like to hire you. And I was like, well, I mean, we need to talk. He said, just never mind. I've got a plane ticket for you. Hop on the plane. We're going to fly you to Toronto, do some screen testing, and then take care of this. So I flew in, went into the one Mount Pleasant,
Yep.
did that stuff. And they said, okay, this is a done deal. We're going to send you home. We'd like you to be here by next weekend. We'll call you out and we'll hack out all the details of the salary. We'll call you tomorrow. So I went home and the phone call never came. And then it never came the next day and the next day and the next day. And I was like, well, this is weird, but, and I'm supposed to be negotiating a contract, so I don't want to look desperate. I don't want to call them. So I let a couple of weeks pass. I call a friend of mine who worked in the building, still works there. And I said, what's going on? I was supposed to get this phone call. And he said, oh, you didn't hear? He was fired. So the guy who was hiring me got fired before he could, set up the paperwork to bring me in. And so then that was kind of the closing the door at Sportsnet. And then years passed. Then they got the contract for the national contract in 2014. And that same guy had been rehired running the newsroom and hired me again and then got fired the day before I started.
Oh my gosh.
But basically, that a chair opened up in Winnipeg because of this contract. They needed someone there, and so because I'd had some prior, interest from Sportsnet, it was the logical choice for me to be the guy in Winnipeg because they'd almost hired me to be one of their guys in Toronto. So that's how that opened up there. Yeah, but the one thing I'll say about taking the news route is like I feel like, people who know me in the business, I've got a reputation. Like I'll ask hard questions. I think it can be, some players at times, I think it can be abrasive. I think once they get to know me, they know that I'm just like really direct. I learned from news that it's like, you can talk about tough topics. If you're direct about it and honest about it, that's the way you handle those things. So I think my style is really shaped from the newsroom. I think it's strong because of every kind of decision I make is very journalistically focused. And journalism, if it's, applied properly, it should be applied through, heavy ethics and, questioning of your own work and, a real intent to make sure that you're doing things and you're doing things right. So all my decisions, I like to think, are extremely weighted, extremely thought out. And I think I'm a big believer in journalism, both news and sports and those things. Like the one thing I think that this whole podcast era that we're in is really good because it gives people voices and allows them to take control of it. I just wish that there was a way to kind of continue filtering that through a really, really journalistic lens because it helps people. And I don't think people know as much. I think they see sometimes they see that as being restrictive. I think when you go through the journalistic process, it's best for everybody involved.
That's what a fascinating way to cap this off. And I would totally agree that it feels like, as you know, the industry is not growing. In many ways it's closing. But that's kind of the problem, is that there's less people to kind of ask hard questions to, not to just, and now it feels like it's very much very focused and filtered from where people are coming from, not just in sports, but everything
Agreed.
else, right?
You're right, in news as well, and it's a problem, and it's like it literally it is a problem that there's not the journalistic process should always go first, and you would understand that. Your dad, teacher of journalism at Carlson, and a mutual friend of ours, Jeff Hamilton, who's a sports writer for the
Amazing.
Winnipeg Free Press, is a guy that everything that I just said, he's an example of how valuable that is. You learned that from your dad. So that's it. You would get it as much as anyone, but guys like Jeff Hamilton, who your dad helped become the journalist he is today, are vital and vastly important in the media landscape.
Well, let's hope Kenny and Rennie keeps, doing hard questions and kind of pushing the fan base and being
No need to
critical.
hope. No need to hope. We will do that. I
Exactly.
promise.
But Sean, thanks so much for taking so much time and coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I always enjoy when you come down to Ottawa to do games. And thanks again for talking some Jets, sharing a bit about your career and coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. I'll see you this weekend. I'm back in Ottawa for
Awesome.
the Nashville game.
Awesome. That made my
All right.
weekend better. So I
All
appreciate it.
right. Yeah.
Awesome.